Welcome to the Serie A Canada podcast. It is a transfer deadline and Champions League edition of the show. I'm your host, Dan Riccio, alongside, as always, Alessandro Sampogna. What up?
What up?
We come to you on August 31st, 2012, following the transfer window closing in Italy. So we know everything that's gone on now. We're done with all the rumors. I know you were getting pissed at me for a while and all my Twitter and shenanigans.
Yeah, at least you don't have to keep hearing your false rumor tweets.
It's not false rumors. I'm just reporting what other people are reporting.
Yeah, they're the ones kind of ruined my day like twice.
Why?
You know, those Berbatov ones didn't go over well.
Well, you know, what happened with Berbatov is like extenuating circumstances.
No, we were happy in the end. Me and the few Juventini I was with yesterday celebrated.
Yeah. Well, why wouldn't you say we didn't want Berbatov in the first place?
No.
What we got was probably worse. We'll talk about that in a little bit. It was a less than exciting close to the transfer window. We both know that. We were expecting a lot more to happen. Nothing really did. So instead, I'm sure a lot of people just tuned into Mr. Falcao running all over the Chelsea Blues for a hat-trick in the European Super Cup today, which was pretty entertaining.
He's probably the best finisher in the game right now. I think I tweeted about it before the Copa America last season, and I talked about how he definitely is one of the top finishers in the game. There is nobody better. He's constantly been scoring on every level and in every league he's been in the last 3 years and in every competition. But at the same time, Atletico spent a lot of money for him, and just like when people came knocking recently, they said they expect a lot of money for him. So he'll probably be there for a while, so we won't see too much of him in the bigger competition since they're Europa League bound this year.
Well, on the show today, we're going to be talking Champions League groupings for Serie A teams, Juventus and Milan. Pretty good for both of them, I'd say. Not great, but especially for Milan. Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Let's not get into it right now. We're also going to talk about match day number 2 in the Serie A. And, of course, we're going to talk about some of the transfers that have happened in the last couple of days. But the big thing is that now we can really provide a preview because we know the rosters. The teams are set.
Well, yeah. The deadline's over. But it must be noted that if you're a free agent, if there's a lot of players out there compared to the last few seasons that are free agents, they could sign at any time during the next few months. Most notably, Alessandro Del Piero.
Well, yeah, I guess that is correct. Yeah, that is correct. Del Piero could sign wherever he wants. Do you think he would go to another Serie A team? I don't know if that. I don't think it would happen.
I don't know. I don't want to.
Maybe if he signed for like Padova, that would be kind of high end.
Well, at least they're
go for another Serie B, Capo Cagnonere. But first, before we get into all this, we're gonna start with the news as always. Edinson Cavani signs a big contract with Napoli, extends through 2017 with the Patronope, but does that necessarily mean he'll stay there?
No, that just means his price is going higher.
His price has gone higher, and now his contract contains a 63 million euro release clause.
Well, that's good for Napoli because they could do exactly what Atletico Bilbao has been doing with Llorente the last 2 weeks, and they can hold firm that, you know, if they're going to let a guy go when teams come knocking, which they already have and we've known about it for a while, you know, they got to pay that price. So it pretty much limits where he's going to go if he does go somewhere to the Barcelonas and the Real Madrids and the Manchester Cities or the Chelseas. But I definitely don't see him going anywhere in the next 2 years. He's still really young. I think by the time he's 25, though, he'll probably be out of there.
Okay, but hypothetical. We like talking about things that may happen. So let's say Cavani has an incredible year in the Serie A, scores 30 goals. Napoli maybe wins the Serie A title.
Or gets close.
Gets close. Maybe win the UEFA Cup, Europa League, whatever you want to call it these days. And Cavani is the big part of that. Now, all of a sudden, Roman Abramovich over in the EPL doesn't have as great a year as he thought he might. Or Man City doesn't have as great a year as they thought they might. They got tons of money to spend. Why not just go and throw the 63 million release clause?
That's definitely what's probably going to happen. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't see it necessarily happening right now. Especially, like, because it's the deadline's over, and I don't see that happening as a winner thing because he'd be using up his UEFA spot. But I think it'd be more next season, something we could talk about next year.
Yeah, it is always interesting to see a release clause or something like that happening, and I'm getting bites all over the place. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but it's going to happen.
You better be safe.
Andrea Della Valle lashes out at Juventus for hijacking.
Chairman.
Yes. Okay, Fiorentina's chairman. That's the
title.
A broadcasting mistake on my part for hijacking their Dimitar Berbatov transfer swoop yesterday or the other day.
It was yesterday. But you know, I feel Juventus did it for a few reasons. I don't necessarily think it was what we were talking about, the whole Marotta showing the strong hand thing because of the whole Jovetic dealings. I think it legit was Marotta saying, hey, we've said it for a while, we want a forward, and he's available. So I think that's what was going on there. But thank God they didn't get him, because at that age, for that price, it definitely wouldn't have been the right move for Juventus. Not like they ended up making the right move, but they didn't make a bad one compared to that one.
Well, you know, Marotta says he didn't do anything wrong. He went after Berbatov after he rejected Fiorentina.
I think that's completely fair if that's the case. And even if this is a transfer market, the whole point is to bid on players. You're not the only one bidding. You know, other people are going to bid on stuff. It's like eBay, right? Like, you can't get mad at the other guy for outbidding you in the last 10 seconds. That's just how it goes.
Well, Della Valle had this to say. I consider the interference in the Fiorentina-Berbatov affair, one concluded between the club and the player, a shameful thing and amateurish. They probably think over there that in order to win, anything is lawful. We don't think like that at Fiorentina. I would have never expected such behavior from that club and their president. Of course, he's talking about Juventus.
He's specifically directing that to Agnelli, but I think Agnelli had nothing to do with this. This is all Marotta. And Marotta, if he was showing the strong hand, then good for him. Because, you know, with their whole Jovetic dealing, I think that's the reason why we didn't end up getting the top player, because they'd strung him along for so long. So, and if it isn't, then hey, that's just the name of the game.
And you know what? For a long time, it was being said that Fiorentina was holding out for $30 million cash. And I've read in the last couple of days, they're all rumors, so you don't know if they're true or not. But Juventus did apparently offer the $30 million in the last couple of days and were rejected still.
So, I believe that, because it's like we talked about a few weeks ago. Juventus does have disposable cash, unlike any other team in Italy right now. They have a reported $30 million disposable with $60 in the bank for the next 2 years as a budget that they could freely spend on a player. Two or three. So I believe that they would offer that if that's the guy they actually wanted, and he is a great player, so I'm assuming they would do that.
It is the Serie A Canada podcast. I'm your host, Dan Riccio, with Alessandro Sampogna. We're going to move on from the news now to talk about the Champions League draw that happened yesterday. And, you know, before we get into that, I just want to say how boring the actual draw is. It's got to be the worst put together TV I've ever seen in my life.
I never watched it this year, but I've watched it many times before, and it is really boring.
It's unwatchable. Yeah. It's unwatchable. It literally is. Oh, okay, we're going to bring up George Weah to open a box of player name or team names now.
And, you know,
it's boring.
Let alone is it boring while watching it. I think the whole time you're just like, is this fixed or is it not?
And well, Man United obviously got the easiest group of all, but we're not going to get into that. We want to focus on Serie A teams, because this is Serie A Canada. We'll talk about Group C first. Milan was in pot one of the draw, meaning they were one of the top tier teams in Europe. So Milan gets in their group Anderlecht, Malaga, and Zenit St. Petersburg. Seemingly a pretty good draw for them. They'll play their first game at home against Anderlecht on September 18th.
I think a lot of people were tweeting yesterday that, wow, Milan got an easier draw than expected. But nothing is as easy as it seems.
Never in Italy.
Zenit and Malaga, I would never count them out that easily. Malaga's made a lot of moves in the last 12 hours that have impressed me. And Zenit is a team that's coached by Spalletti, who I've always had a lot of respect for as a coach, with a lot of players that I have respect for on that team. And I think that they play organized soccer, and they play a lot better as a team right now than Milan has shown in the last few weeks. So Milan's got another thing coming if they think it's easy. But looking at it on paper, it looks like they should be able to get through. There should be no reason. Anderlecht should be a couple wins for them. And it's really how they do against Malaga and Zenit.
Yeah, well, Anderlecht, they're the most famous Belgian team.
Yeah, they've always been. They're like the Juventus of Belgium.
But they haven't been there for quite a while. They haven't been there for 4 or 5 years.
Since the 70s or the 80s have they even made a strong push in that competition. So you really can't expect too much for them.
Yeah, and Malaga, never really a big team in Spain, but they got a new chic owner last year, and there's been a lot of problems with this owner.
There has been the problems of him not paying the players, but allegedly they've been given some money from a bank, and things should be taken care of for them in the next few weeks. And I think if they start paying the players, maybe the players will start playing better. So,
but they have made a ton of transfers in the last couple of years, so they could be a team that could surprise. And Zenit has the advantage of playing in Russia, where it's never, ever easy to play.
No, it's not.
So they have three games where they should collect points from, at the very least. So we'll move on to Juventus's group. It is Group E. They were drawn with Chelsea, Shakhtar Donetsk, and FC Nordjylland. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but I believe they are from Norway.
Denmark. It's okay. A shame that this isn't Group C. Or the name is in Group C, considering it's the champions group, because Juventus being the champions of Italy, Shakhtar being the champions of Ukraine, and Norge, whatever, the champions of Denmark, and Chelsea the champions of Europe. This is the champions group, and it's like a lot of people have said, it's not an easy group, but it's not a really, really tough group. It could have been a lot worse. We talked about how I tweeted about how their pot and what Juventus was in. They had a chance to be in a group with Barcelona, Man City, and Dortmund if it went the wrong way. So yeah, this went pretty well for them in that sense. But it's still going to be a little difficult, but I do expect them to get through. I think their toughest one will probably be Chelsea. But after what they showed today, it looks good for us.
Yeah, well, Chelsea, I never understood that team, but they've made a lot. They spent over 100 million euro in the transfer.
Yeah, it's like I said last week about Inter, although they proved me wrong. You know, it's it never necessarily always works when you throw a bunch of things together.
No, but what I think Chelsea did was that they threw a lot of money at young players, and they want them to grow together. So they threw a lot of money in this summer. They bought a lot of guys who are really young. Oscar from Brazil.
Yep.
Eden Hazard's very young. Yep. So they bought some younger players.
They brought in a few young players,
and I think they're hoping that they'll grow together to really make a European super team.
I just think that looking at their team, I think they do need a striker, and I don't know why they didn't move on one. You know, they got a couple guys there, but you know, losing Drogba, he's crucial to them. And he scored the crucial goal for them to win the Champions League. So, you know,
He did. It is worth noting, though, that FC Nordjylland, one of the players on their team is the son of Michael Laudrup, former Juventus player.
Yep.
So that should be interesting to see that happen.
And we also just got a Danish player. And the last Danish player didn't work out too well in Christian Poulsen, but this one I don't think will do it very much better either.
Okay, well, we're a little bit of foreshadowing before we get into the transfer roundup.
Before we move on, I want to talk about what happened the day before the draw in the Champions League, and that was Udinese, because it's ironic that a week ago, when they announced who would be the ref for the second leg, it was a referee, and I don't remember his name right now, but the last three times he refed games, it was when Napoli lost to Chelsea in the Champions League. And it was when Milan lost to Barcelona. Those are the last times he coached refed an Italian team's game in the Champions League. So the Italians were already saying this is a bad omen for Udinese, and it ended up being really bad. So that's it's a little ironic that it worked out that way.
It's more Pablo Armero's fault than anybody else. I mean, that was probably the greatest blooper one of the greatest bloopers you'll ever see.
It's clearly the field wasn't up to par.
Yeah,
come on,
but I mean, still, it's just so funny to watch. It's incredible. Like, if you haven't seen it, Armero's going in all alone pretty much and goes to kick the ball and ends up
He
stubs his toe on the grass and falls face first.
Had a clear shot on goal. Probably would have been a goal too.
He had already scored the first one though. But the big thing was Mike Uzel's penalty. And if Udinese is counting on him to be their star to help them through the Serie A this year,
he's got to smarten up.
Oh my God, he's got to smarten up. Chipped it at the keeper. I don't know if he thinks he's Andrea Pirlo. But if you're going to do something like that, you got to wait for the goalie to move. So it didn't work out, to say the least. Udinese loses on penalties to Braga and doesn't qualify for the UEFA Champions League. They'll head to the Europa League again this year. It is the Serie A Canada podcast. Alessandro Sampogna and Dan Riccio right here. We just finished the Champions League groupings, talking about Juventus and Milan. We like their chances to advance through the first stage of the Champions League. Now we will get on to match day 2 of the Serie A and some of the transfer roundup. We're going to talk about each game, and as we go through, we'll talk about each team's mercato season or transfer season as well as we go through each. Now, the first game of the weekend will be tomorrow. Well, Al just brought something up that I didn't know about yet, and it is the Europa League draw of teams. This actually happened today, so I hadn't got a chance to see it yet. So, some of the Italian teams, we're going to look at Group A of the Europa League. Udinese gets drawn with Liverpool, Young Boys, and Anji Mahajachalkada.
Well, Anji's from Russia, and they're most notable for getting at, though.
Yeah.
Young Boys is from Switzerland. That should be easy for Udinese, but Liverpool, that's never going to be easy.
No, that's never going to be easy.
They've always been really well against Italian teams, so...
And Anji is... They're a team that spent a lot of money.
And playing in Russia is never easy, but you know, I think when Anzi comes to Udinese, it should be when Udinese gets their chance to get back at them.
Yeah, but that's going to be a tough group for Udinese. Group F is where Napoli stands. They will be up against PSV, Dnipro, and AIK.
AIK is from Greece, and they're not the champions. They're a little weaker side, and Dnipro is another weaker side from Ukraine. They're, again, not the champions. Shakhtar was the champions there. But PSV, although not the champions in Holland... I say definitely will probably be the champions this year. They bulked up. Their team looks a lot stronger.
They won 9-0 yesterday in their
qualifier. They won 9-0 in their qualifying yesterday. They look a lot stronger. They bulked up. So that might be the only difficult game for Napoli. Otherwise, I think they should easily win that group. Easily.
Group H is where you will find Inter. They will be up against Rubin Kazan, Partizan Belgrade, and Neftchi.
I honestly never heard of Neftchi. We'll probably have to look that one up a little later to get more of a background on them. But we know who Partizan Belgrade is. They've been around for a while. They're always in these European competitions. Should be easy for Inter, except for Rubin Kazan. Rubin Kazan was the second place team in Russia last year. They won it the year before. They won their cup last year. They got Salvatore Bocchetti on their team, an international Italian defender. They play like a unit team, so it should be tough for Inter.
Yeah, and
that game, but the rest of the group should be easy for
them. We're going through this. We talked about the Champions League. We're talking about UEFA Europa League now. It's very evident as we're going through that how strong Russia has become over the last few
years. Well, they got a lot of money now.
Yeah, they got a lot of oil money, and a lot of their owners are throwing it around. Group J is where you will find Lazio and the last Italian team in the UEFA Europa League. Lazio will be up against Tottenham Hotspur, Panathinaikos, and Maribor.
Maribor is another team I've never heard of, so I'll definitely have to do some more research.
That's the beauty of the Europa League. Yeah. You learn things about teams you never heard of.
Assuming that would be a walk through the park, Panathinaikos could be tough. You know, they're not, again, not champions of Greece, but they are a good team in Greece. They've won it before, and they've done notoriously well in the Europa League competitions. Tottenham is the question mark. You know, they're up and down. They got money, they got a good coach, and they got named players. But do they ever really end up playing up to
they've sold a lot of players, too. I mean, they sold their centerpiece, which was Luka Modric. They also sold Raphael van der Vaart today. They've brought in Clint Dempsey. So there's a lot of stuff going on with Tottenham. Yeah. There's a lot of moving parts, and I don't know how it's going to gel all right away.
Looking at it on the outset, I think all the Inter, Napoli, and Lazio should definitely make it through their group. Possibly Inter and Napoli winning their group. But Udinese, I think, will probably have a tough time. I don't even know if they'll make it out their group, I'll be honest. I think Anzi and Liverpool probably end up making it out their group.
I'm not liking what Udinese has done this year, so I don't have much faith in them to move on either.
Before we move on, I want to talk about one other thing that happened in Europa League competition on Thursday. Fenerbahce, the team that purchased Milos Krasic recently. That was in the Champions League qualifying. They lost and are now going to be in the Europa League. But for all you Juventus fans who remember Milos Krasic and not much of him from last year, he won't be around too much this year as well because he suffered a very horrific injury in their qualifying game and will probably be out up to 6 months.
Well, that doesn't bode well for him. I mean,
no, it's
been
a downhill spiral for him since that last game.
He was a class act for Juve usually. I mean, at least off the field, you know, he had problems with diving and whatever, and he had his problems with Conte, have been documented, but you know, even when he left, he was very classy about the whole situation, despite not being played for pretty much a whole season.
Unlike Elia.
Yeah, whereas Elia took the high road, and you know, he bashed Juventus.
But it should be noted that, you know, following Elia on Instagram,
I've seen him post a lot of pictures of marijuana smoking, and not that I don't condone that, but as a soccer and a player and a professional, I don't think that's probably the best decision. So I can see where Conte had his little fallings out with
It all makes sense now, right? Yeah. Okay, so it is the Serie A Canada podcast. We just had some breaking news. We had to get it to you. The UEFA Europa League groups just went down, and we just talked about that. The transfer roundup is coming as we talk about match day two. So let's go through the games. Torino will play tomorrow, Saturday, September 1st, against Pescara at noon Eastern. It'll be noon Eastern. Should be an interesting game. I mean, two of the newly promoted teams going up against each other. Torino made a couple of interesting moves today. I don't think either of them will be in the lineup. Not really big-time moves, but, you know, some depth moves and hopefully guys that can make a difference for them as the season goes on. What do you think might happen between Torino and Pescara?
You know, looking at the lineups, I really like what Torino's putting out there. Maziello, Brighi, Cerci, Bianchi, and Stevanovic. These are all players that I've always liked what I've seen from them and how they play. And I think together, because most of those guys have played together before, you know, they have a lot of chemistry. And I think that's what's probably going to take them to victory over Pescara. My prediction will probably be to Torino over Pescara.
You know, I'm really curious to see what Alessio Cerci does for Torino. He was their big signing. I don't think he played last week at all.
No.
Because he was just recently signed from Fiorentina. So he will get a chance to play this week, and I'm really curious to see what he can do because he can be a very effective player.
And they're playing him on the wing, something that he hasn't done in a couple years, which is a position where he made a name for himself.
Yeah, it's his more natural position, but Fiorentina didn't find space for him there. So
they tried playing him as a lone striker, and he's not that guy.
No, he's not that guy. So we'll move on to Pescara. They signed Ivan Pelizzoli today, the goalkeeper from Padova. He used to play for Roma in his younger days, but
he made a
fell
big
off
move
the map.
At
fell
a young age from Atalanta to Roma, but he ended up going back to Atalanta for many years after that because it just, you know, he didn't get the success everyone thought he would
have. Yeah, he just kind of fell off the map. Vladimir Weiss is Pescara's big summer signing, in our opinion, and he
showed good signs last week. Most people talked very highly of him from what they saw last week from him. Other than that, Pescara didn't have much to note. But on that note, Inter didn't look too great against Pescara either at times. The first 15 minutes of that game, Pescara was all over Inter. Before Inter just hit him on two quick counterattacks with some goals, the game looked like it could have went Pescara's way. And then after that, I think Pescara kind of gave up, and the game just fell flat in the middle. It was a very, very entertaining game.
Yeah, their goals for the season will be to stay up in the Serie A.
As of right now, I don't think they could do it.
Yeah, it doesn't look pretty for them. Of course, you know, we talked about them losing Immobile, Verratti, and Insigne.
And the coach, Zeman.
And their coach, Zeman, who coached them to a tie for the Serie B win. But we'll move on. Bologna and Milan will play at 2:45 Eastern time tomorrow. You can catch that on Rai. And, of course, all of the Serie A TV listings for Canada are on our website, serieacanada.blogspot.com. So Bologna will play Milan. Bologna made a few moves today. They brought in Gilardino. He probably will start on the bench tomorrow, and Acquafresca and Diamanti will stay up. But the big thing that happened for Bologna today was losing Gaston Ramirez to Southampton, which is something we've talked about for a while now. He really wanted to push his way out of Italy, and he got his wish.
Well, I think it really hurts the club Bologna, and it hurts their chances to make my prediction of being in the top 10 like they had completed last year. Right now, I'm going to go back on that prediction and say that probably won't happen. Ramirez was a big part of their year last year. He had many assists to De Vile. And even though I do like a lot of guys on the team, I think he was way more in form. A lot of these guys still have a lot to prove. He was ready to go, and I think they're going to lose a step, definitely at least at the beginning, without him. And you know, that's two big players they lost from last year, De Vile and Ramirez, and that's never easy to replace, at least right off the bat. I'd expect Milan to have their way with them a little, especially since Bologna's finding their way. But at the same time, isn't Milan finding their way?
Yeah, we saw that with Milan. They lost 1-0 to Sampdoria last week. Couldn't break through the Sampdoria wall. The Ciro Ferrara wall is what I'm going to start calling it if they can continue this.
He was a great defender.
He was a great defender in his day, and he's coaching some pretty strong defensive soccer.
You know, he listed it as a 4-3-3 is what he was going out with. That's Chito Ferrara. But as soon as they got that goal, and I think even earlier, they were really playing a 5-4-1. And even though it might have been on paper a 4-3-3, I'm talking about Sampdoria here, they were playing a 4-5-1 because that's what you have to play when you're somewhat of a weaker side compared to the bigger sides.
Especially when you get a one-goal lead as well. But Milan made a lot of, like you said on last week's podcast, they made a lot of late moves on the transfer window. They brought in Nigel De Jong from Manchester City. They brought in Boyan from Roma, and Mbaye Niang is brought in from Cayenne. He's a loan, but he'll be made.
All three are loans, Dan.
Yeah, they're all three loans. But Niang.
What else is due from Milan? It's loans.
Niang for sure will be made permanent next summer.
You know, the way I look at it is, we both talked about how we both think that Boyan's on the cusp of breaking through, and I've always liked what I saw from him back at Barcelona when he was getting his time off the bench. But then again, maybe playing on Barcelona, it's a lot easier to do those things. Is he really for real? We'll find out this year. But I really like Boyan, and I expect him to do really good things for Milan. It's a great signing. You know, he's wearing Kaká's number, and he was the reason they're not getting Kaká. He was the answer to not getting Kaká, sorry. You know, it makes you wonder, like, could he be that? And maybe would a Kaká been better? That's going to be a topic all year for Milan. We'll find out in the coming months. I don't want to go there just yet. But I do want to say that I think Milan should get an easy win off Bologna.
Yeah, tomorrow. And Milan, Allegri spoke today. He says we're aiming for a top three finish. So, you know, at least he's realistic about their goals. That's what they want. And
he said top three finish and at least a second round go through to the Champions League. And that's so realistic.
It's realistic. It's obviously the high end of what they could accomplish because this team just doesn't look like much to me right now. So we'll move to Sunday's games, and the first one is Udinese and Juventus.
It's the first game of the day.
It's the first game on Sunday at noon. You can catch that on Rai International as well in Canada. Udinese, this will be their fourth game in, 13 days or 14 days? So, and one of them was 120 minutes, so they are dog tired.
Armero's not even, you know, he's not in the starting lineup. He is on the bench, but, you know, that is also to do with the rule that you can bring as many guys as you want on the bench now in the Serie A.
12.
So, you know, I think they're just, you know, he's just the body there. I highly doubt you'll see some playing time. He went the whole 120 that day.
Yeah, this is tough for Udinese. I mean, to go through all that, they look dog tired in that game against Braga on Wednesday. I don't know how they made it through, to be honest. The 120 minutes, towards the end, they just looked like they couldn't even complete passes. They were so tired. This team, they haven't really done much since we last spoke. So I don't know what else there is to really say.
And looking on the other side, it brings a smile to my face, but Buffon's back in net, and Chiellini's back in the starting lineup. I really think Udinese is going to have a hard time. You know, it's the real Juventus here. Buffon, Barzagli, Bonucci, Chiellini, Lichtsteiner, Vidal, Pirlo, Marchisio, Asamoah, Matri, Vucinic. These are all top players, top-of-the-line players.
Yeah.
This is a great lineup. And looking back at Udinese's lineup, you know, it looks a lot of question marks there. So I think definitely a Juventus win. Maybe it won't come easy. Maybe it will. We'll see how that goes. But it's definitely going to be a Juventus win for sure on Sunday.
Yeah, but let's just talk about some of Juventus's transfers. Asamoah showed us last week how great he can be. He was man of the match by far against Parma. He was fantastic. I mean, there's just not enough superlatives I could say about.
Well,
he got
the assist on the Lichtsteiner goal, and he was up and down the field the whole time, and I love that about him. And he was a very good purchase. And I was really happy when they bought him 2 months ago. I was very, very happy. You know, when I saw him in the 2010 World Cup, I knew he'd be a star one day. And I hope now he's going to have his chance.
You know what? In sports, first impressions are everything.
Yeah.
And so when Juventini saw Asamoah running up and down the left wing like that and just making a name for himself right there, forever he'll have a place in our hearts now because of that performance that he put up against Parma last week. But Juventus, we talked about it a little bit. They didn't get the top striker that they wanted. They got Nicholas Bentner on loan from Arsenal, the Danish striker. It's free.
You know, I like the move for one reason.
It's free.
No, it's a loan. And because he's, you know, that means that we don't have to necessarily have the guy. When I heard the Berbatov move, I was upset because we got to have this guy for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
That means he's going to be holding down the Immobiles and the Pasquatos and the Gabbiadinis that will probably be on their way back to Juventus for next season.
Bonatini. Or...
You know, these are like these are why I really wanted just one loan and not to go out and get a top player is because of what we saw from Immobile last week. And he scored a great goal that he made all by himself. The guy's talented. The guy's young. And he's our player. So if we can get him back for next season, we don't need that top player and that top scorer because he is that guy. And we don't need to sign the guys like Bettner. But at the other end, you got him for free, and you have a clause that all you're taking him for is $5 million if you actually want him. So if he does get the 20 goals or the 15 goals, if, and these are big ifs.
He's going to have to beat up Matri and Jovinko and Vucinic.
And Quagliarella.
And Quagliarella. I mean, me, he's fifth on the depth chart.
But if he gets those goals, then all it costs you is $5 million, and that's cheaper than all the other guys you just mentioned.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. And it should be mentioned that Jovinko will be out for the next couple of games for Juventus. He will miss the World Cup qualifiers with Italy. Matri will get his chance to play, and we'll see what he can do. Moving on to Cagliari-Atalanta. Cagliari, we talked about them last week. They are destined for a relegation fight. They haven't made many moves whatsoever in the last week or so, so there's not much to talk about there.
You know, it's crazy because Cagliari, I talked about it last week. It's not always a bad thing to not switch up your team when you did well, but Cagliari didn't do well last year. They didn't switch up the team too much. They didn't change much, and that's a bad thing. And they went against a young Genoa team that was still finding itself, and that team outscored them 2-0 and outplayed them. I watched most of that game, and you know, I didn't see much from Cagliari. I was very unimpressed. And now they got an Atalanta team who, much like them, didn't change much, but they have a lot better chemistry, and they did a lot better last season. They could have been Europa League had they not had that the point deduction to start with. So I think probably Atalanta is going to get the better of them in Cagliari this weekend.
I think the best thing Atalanta did was being able to keep Schelotto.
Oh, for sure. You know, when I heard that those rumors this morning that he might go to Napoli, I was going to call it the deal of the day because for Napoli, that's a great move. Schelotto, who plays on the under-20 Italy and probably has played a couple times for the main team already, he's going to be a good star in the future. He's still getting there. You know, he shows good signs, and then he shows some bad signs here and there, but he's young.
A young player finding his way. But yeah, Atalanta, because they haven't made many moves, I think they'll be a mid-table side. But they won't be battling for relegation.
No, they'll be clear away from that.
Catania and Genoa is the next match we will move on to. Catania made some little moves today, but again, for a lot of these smaller teams, a lot of it is being able to keep your players. Alejandro Gomez, Lodi, you know, Barrientos, these are guys that they needed to keep in order for them to stay in the Serie A.
We're a big part of them in the last couple of years doing well and staying in the Serie A. And without them, they wouldn't be able to stay there. But, you know, it's that same Catania, half Argentinian team, and these guys have a lot of chemistry, and they like playing with each other, and they're all good friends. And we saw that last week against the new Roma that we all hyped up, and us two included. You know, and they weren't scared. They were in Rome, and they weren't scared, and they took two leads. You know,
and it took two beautiful goals from Roma to come back.
But Roma fans should feel undone. You know, there is a lot of footage evidence that the refs made some bad calls that game, and it could have been a different game for Roma. But that's soccer, and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, but that goal that Osvaldo scored, holy mackerel!
But what about Lisandro Lopez? It's
Nicolas Lopez.
Whatever.
Lisandro plays in France. Come on!
Oh, yeah.
both of them were fantastic goals. The first one was a ball from... we'll talk about it when we get to Roma. They'll be next. Let's talk about Genoa first. Genoa, Immobile, you said, scored a fantastic goal. They bring in Borriello from Roma today. They made a lot of little moves today. Making some depth and stuff like that kind of moves.
Well, Giordino didn't work for them. He didn't work at all. He had a really bad year for them, or half year for them. So, you know, they let it go. They loaned him out to Bologna. His contract will be done by the time he comes back. So it's like they got rid of something that didn't work for them. But now they brought in Borriello. Borriello had a lot of success for them in his past. So, you know, for them, they're thinking if Borriello works, it works. But they got Immobile anyhow. And so they know that he's their guy for the future, for this season.
Yeah, well, if you want to talk about Marco Borriello and how he played for 2007-2008 Genoa team, go look at our Facebook page, facebook.com/Serie A Canada. There's a video up there of how good Marco Borriello was that year. And, you know, it just, it's amazing. I mean, it's so long ago now that I think about it, but he was fantastic that year for them, scoring 19 goals.
And he's still pretty young, and he could probably do something special, too, if given the chance. But, you know, I think the guys like a guy like Immobile will probably be holding him back for a bit. So
yeah,
when that time comes and he will get his chance, like every player always does, he's going to have to make the most out of it. But, again, I really like this Genoa team. A lot of young Italians on there and other nationalities. And I think they're probably going to surprise, like I predicted last week.
Inter and Roma is probably the biggest matchup of
game
the weekend.
Game of the week, for sure.
Inter going with the 4-3-2-1. What's there to say about them? Well, Diego Milito was incredible last week.
He was good.
Yeah, goal and two assists. He did all right. He was okay.
Yeah, he's okay. It was Pescara, come on.
I know, but still, he played really well. They struggled against Vaslui in their UEFA Cup game this week. It's like we talked about. They made a lot of transfers. Alvaro Pereira, Cassano, you know, a lot of transfers. Rodrigo Palacios as well. They're going to take some time to gel together, and it'll be interesting to see how they do in the beginning of the season.
You know, they're definitely, you know, I said they wouldn't get close to the top three, but I'm going to change that. I think they could challenge for the top three, and they could challenge for the top two, but I still can't see this team winning the Scudetto. To me, they don't have Scudetto quality with them.
Yeah. Well, they've done a lot, and we'll see how it all gels together. That's the thing. When you make a lot of moves, you got to see how everything moves together. Moving on to Roma, disappointing 2-2 draw with Catania last week. Now they have to play Inter, so it's going to be tough to get 3 points here. It'll start them on, you know, back in the Serie A, which isn't a good thing to get off to a bad start. But
we get to see Destro.
Yeah.
We get to see Destro. I'm excited for that.
I got to put him in my lineup then. My fantasy Serie A lineup.
You get to see Destro. I'm very excited about that. De Rossi showed some great signs last week. He got an assist, and it was beautiful. And, you know, I think him hooking up with Destro now should be good. Osvaldo, it's funny about Osvaldo. They talk about him leaving. They talk about all these things about him, yet he's always finding his way into the starting lineup. Even when they say he shouldn't even be on the team anymore, he finds his way into the starting lineup and he scores. This was going on for him last year. I don't personally like the player on my team, but I have respect for the actual character of the person, that he puts up with the stuff and still goes to work every day and tries to do his best.
It looks like we're also going to see young, up-and-coming Italian talent Florenzi play in the midfield.
With the injury to Bradley. But, you know,
Bradley played well last week.
He played really well, but he's questionable, so this could change, Dan.
Yeah, this could change. And Michael Bradley really impressed me. Had the great assist on Nicolas Lopez's goal.
I think the reason we're seeing Florenzi in this probable lineup is also because Marquinho played really bad.
Yeah.
He played really bad in his first start, and that was probably his spot. That was the spot that they have Florenzi in right now. I wouldn't put too much stock into this, Dan. I actually don't think Florenzi will be in the real starting lineup by Sunday.
Yeah, well, the good thing is Roma has a lot of depth nowadays, yeah. So they can make moves here and there. Moving on to Lazio and Palermo. Lazio, they looked fantastic midweek against in their UEFA Europa League match, but they... They've been a very good team all around. So what more is there to say? They didn't make too many moves the last couple days. They are Lazio. They have Klose. They have Mauri. They have Lulic. They have Hernanez.
And they have Kozak. And they have Zerati. And they have Rocky. And they have Flockery. And they have Brocchi. You know, these guys all got to play. Like, all their second unit got to play the other day. And they dismantled that team. And maybe it wasn't such a big competition for them. But those guys, like Kozak and Zarate, said at the end of the game that they're hungry and they want their chance. And in front of them, they got some competition in Klose and Mauri. But, you know, that's good for Lazio fans, and that's good to hear. I still will stick with my prediction that I don't think they'll make a top four finish. And I don't think they'll be too much up there because I don't believe in this coach.
Yeah, and it's going to be tough for them. It's hard to go without an Italian coach, but they have the talent there to maybe make a top three push in a best-case scenario with all the players that they have. Moving on to Palermo. That's what I have to say about Palermo.
Yeah. Well, you know...
Okay, we'll move on to Napoli.
You know, Palermo, like... It's just like, who are these guys that they're putting out there, you know? And sometimes these guys, they end up shocking you.
You know,
but who are these guys?
Well, they, you know, they got rid of Migliaccio to Fiorentina today.
He was a backbone. He's not a guy that, you know, like a Man City's going to come and call up one day. But he's a backbone for the teams like Palermo, and you can't give that guy away and expect it not to hurt your team.
I'm really down on Palermo this season. I think they might be fighting for relegation.
Just like Bologna, you know, if they do come around, it won't be right away.
Yeah.
It's going to take them some time because a lot of these guys are young. I know a lot of these names. They're younger guys. And, you know, in time they could become a name and they could be consistent players, but right now they're still finding their way. And most of them aren't even Italian, so, you know, it's a different game for them and a different country.
The number two matchup of the weekend, probably behind Inter-Roma, is Napoli-Fiorentina. Both teams have high expectations this year. We know what happened with Fiorentina and the Berbatov saga. Napoli, looks like Insigne will be in the starting lineup once again with Cavani. Cavani not going anywhere anytime soon, it seems. Marek Hamšík was sublime last week, as he usually is in the midfield for Napoli. They looked good last week, and they're going to look good all season.
Oh, yeah. You know, I predicted last week they'd have an easy victory, and they did. And I think against Palermo, and I think this weekend, though, it won't be so easy, but they should get the victory. You know, Fiorentina, we said about it, they had a great campaign. They changed that whole team, and it seems like it's even working already, and that's great. But
Montella's a great coach.
He's a great coach, and I have a lot of respect for him, especially what he did over there at Catania.
He's got big things ahead of him in his career.
Napoli's way more ready for this one, and I think that they should probably overcome Fiorentina. I'm back on the Lazio Padma. I definitely think Lazio's going to get the win there.
Palermo.
Yeah.
Napoli made the move for Gianluigi Mesto today over Ezequiel Scelotto. I don't know why they would prefer him, but maybe Mesto is a little bit cheaper and really, they only wanted him as a depth player,
maybe?
Yeah,
I think Scalotto probably would have had a hard time having to go straight to a bench, even if it is Napoli's bench, because, you know, he was in the contention for the top young Italian Serie A player last season, and he's not a bench player. He's more of a starter in the Serie A, so it was probably better for him that he gets to keep playing regular soccer.
They also brought in highly touted Brazilian defender Bruno Uvini.
Yeah.
He's only 18 or 19 years old, I think.
That was a shock move for me because, you know, Sao Paulo's in the thick of their season, so I was very shocked that happened so quick.
Yeah, and he's a guy that could really help out the Napoli defense. Maybe not so much this year, but in years to come. Fiorentina, though, they made a move for their former star today. He made a name for himself with Fiorentina and Palermo. That is Luca Toni. He was the Capo Cagnanere for Fiorentina. He scored 31 goals. I think it was 06-07. What a player he was back then. It was the World Cup year. That's right. He was a great player back then. We saw him with Juventus the last couple of seasons. Wasn't really much at all.
You know, but after Fiorentina, he went for a big money move to Bayern Munich, and he did really well there. They won leagues. They won titles. After that, he went sort of in the decline. The guy's, you know, over 30-something.
Yeah, and he always looked awkward when he played.
Yeah.
But he always got it done, it seemed. And
he's the type of guy that's in the right place at the right time a lot. You know, I talked about it this morning on the webpage that Fiorentina was looking for their guy. Much like Juventus, you know, are the fans disappointed that it's this guy? Yeah, I'm sure they're disappointed. I guess they got to give more of a chance to the El Hamadouis and, you know, the Fernandez and these other guys that they got that they hope to become something special, because Toni isn't the answer.
Yeah, but talking about last week, Udinese, they came back from 1-0 down to win 2-1, two goals from Jovetic. The ball from Aquilani on the second goal, cross-field diagonal from center all the way to the other side of the 18-yard box was just amazing. I haven't seen something like that from Aquilani in a long time.
It reminded me of Montolivo's pass to Balotelli against Germany.
Yeah, exactly. That was a great, great comparison. Moving on to Parma and Chievo, a battle of two mid-table teams. Parma, although losing to Juventus last week, really somewhat impressed me. I wasn't expecting much, but Pabon and Biabiani really played well together, and they really have speed to kill.
I think you moved on a little too fast. I want to say something about the Napoli team. I don't know if a lot of people caught the game last week, but Insigne didn't play. He went on for 20 minutes and suffered from cramps and had to be taken out. So the Insigne debut, and someone I've hyped a lot, we didn't really get to see it too much. But he's back in the starting lineup again because, like we've said, Pandev is suspended. And so he's got one more chance before Pandev comes back to make this a regular thing. I hope he can do it, but it might be a little tougher for him now because Fiorentina's tough competition. Now let's go back to Parma, please.
Well, as I was saying about Parma, they didn't look great last week against Juventus, but Biabiani and Pabon as the, I guess, strikers. Biabiani's not listed as a striker right now, it seems.
He's a winger, Dave.
Yeah, he's a winger. But, you know, those two have such incredible speed that it caused Juventus a little bit of trouble at the back.
It definitely did. And those are the only worries we had in the game was when Biabiani was attacking on the wing and getting it to Pabon, and Pabon was, you know, turning the defenders. That's great for Parma fans. They should be happy that they got some good things out of
some
that.
Some speed, but they're going to have to play a killer counterattack to have it work for them.
They started Akoa last week, which we didn't expect, and I'm happy about that, but he didn't look good. He was fouling like crazy. He couldn't keep up in the midfield against the likes of Pirlo. But he could have an easier time now against Chievo. You know, Chievo got rid of Bradley, who was definitely one of their strong points last year. So in the midfield, maybe he could have a better chance of actually showing what I think he has in him. He looked great for me last year in Palermo, and I think that's a great move for Parma. And, you know, I think Parma should be able to stay up. They definitely should. It could be difficult, but if they win the games against Chievos and the Siena's, then they should have an easier time.
Yeah, Chievo didn't really they haven't made too many moves there in the last week or so. So
they kept mostly the same team from last year. They got rid of Bradley, and that same team beat Bologna. You know, Bologna trying to find its way. Parma not necessarily trying to find its way. So we got two teams more in form and chemistry with themselves. So it should be a very evenly contested game.
Yeah.
I'd see a draw this way, to be honest, but who knows?
Yeah, and one of the things for Parma, the keys this year, Ninis is a Greek player who they thought would be something, and he hasn't really shown much since arriving at Parma, but hey, there's still time.
He was on the Greek Euro team, Cup.
Yeah, he was.
He didn't get too much playing time there, but he looked okay. You know, he had some good runs. That he could end up being something good for them in the long run, but for right now, I think Parma is going to stick with mostly their same core that they have going.
Moving on to the final game of the weekend, that is Sampdoria and Siena. Sampdoria looked to get the season off to a 2 wins.
I talked about it last week. I liked what I saw from Sampdoria 2 weeks ago against Barcelona. I loved what I saw from them last week against Milan. Other than the little spell Milan had at the end, I felt that Sampdoria looked really good. They play really well as a unit, and they're listening really well to their coach. And I think that they're gonna finish top 10 for sure this year.
Yeah, Maxi Lopez is in the starting lineup. Andrea Poli was fantastic last week, as he usually is. He's very consistent for a young player. Enzo Maresca is brought in to help as a veteran presence.
We both have always liked him. We know that. And Maresca is a great midfielder for what he does.
Yeah.
And he does it really well compared to Kristic, who they were starting. Kristic is young. And I think you need more experience. And Maresca's got it. He's played with the best of them before. He's gone up and down in his career. He's played everywhere. And I think he's finally gonna have a place where he could make it his own.
I really like the move as for Maresca to really help the likes of Obiang and Poli in the midfield because those are both young players. And as you said, we both think Sampdoria is set for a pretty good season in the Serie A. They won't be fighting to stay up. They're going to stay up pretty safely, I think.
You know, and they play old-school Italian defensive soccer. And that's
Ciro Ferrara, baby.
And that's what works in this league.
I think we should coin it, the Ciro Ferrara wall.
Maybe we should.
We should coin it right here on the Serie A Canada podcast. One more team to talk about, that is Siena. They made some moves today. They tried to get Luca Toni, and one of the things that I was thinking when Fiorentina swooped in for Luca Toni once he was about to go to Siena was that, didn't they just get mad at Juventus for swooping in and stealing Berbatov? Now they're going to do that?
Hypocrites.
Hypocrites is my thought exactly. I mean, you don't go out and make those comments and then do the same thing 5 minutes later. They brought in Jay Eduardo from Genoa. They brought in Alessandro Rosina to try and help them stay in the Serie A. It's going to be tough. They got 1 point last week, so now they're only -5. But it's still going to be a climb up the ladder.
You know, I think Siena's going to have a tough time staying up this year. And I love their coach Cosmi. He's very eccentric.
Sergio Cosmi, our favorite coach in the Serie A.
They've lost too much this year in regards to their players, and I don't think it's
it's gonna be their year, that's for sure.
That'll wrap it up for us here on the Serie A Canada podcast. But before we go, we got to remind you, serieacanada.blogspot.ca, all of our latest blogs. It's where you can find this very podcast, as well as contests such as our Fantasy Serie A contest. Be sure to set your team for the second match day. And full TV listings as well are now up on serieacanada.blogspot.ca. Also, one more thing before we go. We've created a Facebook page. Be sure to check it out. Like it so you can get all the updates from us right away. It will come right to your notification page. That's facebook.com/Serie A Canada. So for Alessandro Sampogna, I'm Daniel Riccio. This was the Serie A Canada podcast.
Bye-bye.